You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
16 years ago, Arianna Huffington gave money to President George H.W. Bush's reelection campaign. But in the past dozen years, she has abandoned the Republican Party, traded in her SUV for a Prius, and founded a website that is helping to transform the media landscape, largely by ripping the political right. In her 12th book, Right is Wrong, How the Lunatic Fringe Hijacked America, Shredded the Constitution, and Made Us All Less Safe, and What You Need to Know to End the Madness, one of the longest titles I've ever read, Ms. Huffington discusses the party she once supported and how it has been transformed by what used to be the periphery with the help of the media. Her book is published by Knopf, and I'm very pleased that it brings Arianna Huffington back to this show. Hi.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
Congratulations on your latest ratings. The Huffington Post had 5.2 million visitors in March, according to Nielsen Online. That makes you bigger than the Drudge Report, doesn't it, now?
Well, we've expanded beyond politics. So because we are including media and business and living and entertainment, we're also attracting people who are not necessarily obsessed with politics, but who discover politics through the site. So we're not just speaking to the choir, which is what we always hoped we could do.
But, of course, that's what newspapers do, and newspapers are seeing declining circulation. You have 5.2 million visitors. I think there aren't too many publishers that wouldn't kill for that. And I gather you reported $7.5 million in revenues last year. Have a reasonable staff, 50. But how do you convince the 800 bloggers you have who regularly post that there's no need for them to be paid?
Well, right now we actually have 1,800 bloggers, and they keep expanding on a daily basis. And the arrangement with our bloggers that they post whenever they want. You know, they post whenever they have something they want to say. A lot of them, in fact, most of them, have successful careers. Others are young, interesting voices who are using the platform of the Huffington Post as an audition platform, and they often get book contracts or record contracts or something else out of it. We offer attention. We offer
They'll be read.
Yes, that is where the comments are pre-moderated, so there are no trolls attacking them in an ad hominem way. There will be criticism, but it's civilized. We offer the technology that keeps everything going smoothly, and most importantly, we offer the millions of users.
Now, I want to get to your book in just a moment, but will you indulge me and allow me to talk about politics now for just a moment?
Of course.
The day after Hillary Clinton defeated Barack Obama in the Pennsylvania primary, the banner headline on the HuffingtonPost.com was, "And the winner is McCain." Does this mean you don't subscribe to the Democratic Party line that extending the primary is good for the candidates in the party?
We have never called on Hillary Clinton to pull out. We believe it's her right to stay in the race as long as there is any hope of her winning, and there certainly is. So the point we were making is not that we need to, in some artificial way, end the primary, but that John McCain is definitely the winner, because right now, what is happening is that the Clinton campaign has internalized a lot of the right's talking points and messages, especially when it comes to fear-mongering. I thought the two ads that she ran, one the 3 a.m. ad, the other the ad on the eve of the Pennsylvania primary with Osama on it, were straight out of Karl Rove's playbook. And that's very unfortunate, because I have written a lot for the last 4 years, including in this book, about the use of fear in politics and how destructive it is, because it appeals to people's lizard brains. And so a rational brain kind of atrophies for that particular moment.
So even though you have personally endorsed Barack Obama, the Huffington Post has not.
No, and I have not endorsed him either. I mean, I write in ways.
Well, I've been yes, following you for a while.
Yeah, it's like what I'm
sounds
saying
to me like he's your candidate.
I would prefer him to win, but again, I have often also written critical things of Barack Obama. When Hillary wins a debate, I write that she won a debate, so I'm not a partisan in that sense. And more importantly, the site, as you know, broke the story of Barack Obama's comments at the San Francisco fundraiser through one of our citizen journalists. We have this project that we are calling Off the Bus with hundreds of citizen journalists around the country writing about what is happening in their area. And Mehil Fowler, who wrote that story, was actually an Obama supporter who's been following him through off the bus for the campaign.
That's probably hurt him as much as anything other than Reverend Wright, the idea that Americans in small towns are bitter, clinging to their guns and their religion as a result.
At the same time, it shows how our media tend to focus on sideshows, whether it's the bitter comments or Reverend Wright, or whether wearing a lapel pin is equivalent to being patriotic, or whether he knew some 60s radical. And, you know, on a day-to-day when we got the horrible news of foreclosures, you know, 110% up since the same time last year, when the news in Iraq and Afghanistan are on a daily basis truly tragic, we have to recognize that we're in a real crisis in this country, and we have a responsibility to focus on what we're going to do to get out of the mess that this administration has brought us to.
My guest is Arianna Huffington. Her latest book is called Right is Wrong. It's published by Knopf, and in it you still seem to have a soft spot for the Republican Party of Ronald Reagan. Don't all of the people who have followed the all the people you've criticized here see him as their role model?
Well, you know, what's happening is that there's a huge, huge difference between the party of Ronald Reagan, and God knows there's plenty to criticize there, and the party of George Bush that has been taken over by the lunatic fringe of the right. They're the people who don't believe in evolution and believe in torture. You know, they're the people who had a debate early on in this process, and the moderator asked the candidates to raise their hand if they did not believe in evolution, and three of them did. You know, I have two teenage daughters, and I wanted them to be basically sent off and made to read their science books, because the problem with the current right is that it is basically refusing to accept that facts exist, that truth exists, and there is reality. So it's really the same thing that we see again and again, whether it's Iraq or tax cuts. They don't want to look at the facts.
But why do you think there's a certain response, a positive response to that? Ben Stein has a new movie out that also questions evolution. You have Ann Coulter, who you write about a bit in this book, who says outrageous things, and yet she keeps on being invited back on all of those cable television shows and even the mainstream media, and she sells millions of books.
Well, that's exactly the point I'm making, that it's time for the mainstream media to stop inviting Ann Coulter back.
I mean, you want them to censor her?
No,
or
I
just
don't think that's censorship.
Disinvite her?
No, I think it's, you know, you have the choice who you invite to your show. You know, if you had not invited me, that wouldn't mean you're censoring me. You know, I'm still free to go to any number of other shows or go online or whatever. I mean, every producer and every host has the right. It's your platform. So that's what I'm saying. That's not censorship. I think the point I'm making is that the so-called mainstream media have basically internalized a lot of the right-wing talking points. And we saw that at the ABC debate when George Stephanopoulos and Charlie Gibson, hardly members of the right, asked completely trivial, unnecessary questions about lapel pins and 60s radicals. We saw it when the New York Times hired Bill Kristol.
Let's stop for a second. Do you think they did that because they saw it as signs of integrity? They were going to ask the tough questions even if they perhaps didn't think that those were important issues?
I don't consider them tough questions. I consider them trivializing questions. And as a result, the tough questions were not asked. The tough questions are, what are we going to do about Iraq? And how are we going to deal with the housing crisis? These are the truly tough questions. And, you know, we have another example of the media's complicity that I write a lot about in the book, and that's the New York Times breaks a major story last Sunday about the Pentagon using, quote-unquote, military analysts to feed them their talking points, to go out there on mainstream media and feed their propaganda to the American people. I think this is a major scandal. That was done at taxpayer expense, and yet there has been a media blackout since then.
I mean, other people haven't picked it up.
No, other people haven't picked it up.
Well, the Times has been accused in the past of not picking up other people's stories. That's because It wasn't theirs. And that is a problem in the press as well.
But the cable news always pick up stories that are not theirs. You know, they don't do their own investigations.
So do you think it's a form of censorship? They're just ignoring the story and hoping it'll go away?
Yeah, because there's a complicity. The media were complicit. We know that many in the media, high up, knew what was happening. So obviously they do not want to expose their own complicity.
There's another thing that you object to, and that is always presenting both sides of the story, as though there are two sides to every story.
Yes. As you know, the first title of my first chapter is Equal Time for Lies. And we see that again and again. There aren't two sides to global warming. There are multiple sides as to what to do about global warming. But for years, and still now, we're debating global warming as though it's legitimate to have, on the one hand, say Al Gore, talking about the dangers of global warming, and on the other hand, Senator James Inhofe, telling us that global warming is a fraud. And that's what I call the Pontius Pilate media, you know, washing their hands off and saying, work it out.
I actually had somebody explain that he should have two sides of the Holocaust denial story on, because where there's smoke, there's fire. And also because if somebody is arguing the other case, he should get an airing.
That is unbelievable to me, honestly. I think that we are not debating whether the earth is flat. We're not debating whether it is legitimate to burn women as witches. You know, there is a time when certain decisions are made and certain issues are settled. Take Iraq. That's another case where...
Please.
Take Iraq, yes. There's no question that Iraq has been the most tragic foreign policy decision this country has ever made. It is a complete debacle, and yet the media continue to report it as a mixed bag, which is true only in the sense that if you go to a doctor and the doctor tells you that you have a brain tumor, but at the same time your acne has improved, then you go away considering the diagnosis a mixed bag. There is no sense in which Iraq is a mixed bag.
You're saying it's a total disaster.
It's a total disaster.
Even if the surge did affect some aspects of life,
I don't
think
the surge worked at all. That was another talking point that the right succeeded in feeding to the media. The reason for the surge was to bring about some political stability. That hasn't happened remotely.
So whose fault is that? Reporters are supposedly leftists on the whole, or liberals anyway. Are they not, or is it their editors, or is it the owners of the newspaper who are setting the agenda?
Well, I've identified three culprits in the book. The first are the media. The second are the democratic leaders who've been too cowed and cowardly. And the third is the use of fear. So we're talking about the media. I think when it comes to the media, there is an enormous amount of emphasis on careerism and access. And we saw that among the best. We saw that with Bob Woodward. I have a whole section in the book on Bob Woodward.
You call him the dumb blonde of American journalism.
Yes, because he was basically so impressed by all the access he had that he missed the story. He truly missed the biggest story of our time, the selling of the Iraq war to the American people. He was there. He had unlimited access. And he bought the spin of Bush and Cheney. Remember, his book was the most highly recommended book on the RNC website.
My guest is Arianna Huffington, who is the co-founder and editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post. She's also a nationally syndicated columnist. She does a radio show that is broadcast on the station. More about that later. And she's been visiting this show now for 20 years or so, the first time to talk about Pablo Picasso, now to talk about her book, Right is Wrong, How the Lunatic Fringe Hijacked America, Shredded the Constitution, and Made Us All Less Safe, and What You Need to Know to End the Madness. It is published by Knopf. Stay with us. My guest is Arianna Huffington. Her latest book is Right is Wrong. It's published by Knopf. I want to go back to the whole business of two sides to every story. You say that the media present all issues as having a right and a left point of view. And you say sometimes it's really a matter of right or wrong point
right.
of view. But that right or left point of view suggests that there's either this answer or that answer. Sometimes there's a whole other group of answers.
Right. And also, I think that the right or left lens through which the media continue to look at American politics is very obsolete. I mean, there's been an amazing shift in American politics, and the media have not really covered it. A lot of issues that were supposed to be left-wing, a lot of positions that were supposed to be left-wing, are now completely mainstream. Pulling out of Iraq is a over 60% position. The need for some form of universal health care, 70% of Americans want it, including many business people, including many companies in Detroit who are seeing their costs explode because they have to carry the health care of their workers. Doing something about global warming, that's no longer a left-wing position.
But there's another kind of fluidity that we saw in Pennsylvania where people who were polled said that if their candidate didn't win, if Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, respectively, didn't win, then they might very well vote for John McCain instead. And that didn't make any sense to me because they're so different. But obviously, there's something else that goes on in the American public's mind.
Yes, I don't think those numbers will hold. I think once the Democratic Party has a nominee, the majority of Democrats, the vast majority of Democrats, will rally around the nominee because they recognize the danger to this country of a third George Bush term, which is effectively what a John McCain term would be.
So that was probably just an expression of bitterness at
the
moment.
Yes, I think right now this has become a very bitter campaign, and partisans on either side are very upset. But I don't think this is going to hold.
You have raised objections to Nancy Pelosi and Newt Gingrich's new environmental ads.
Yes,
what bothers you about those?
Here's what happened. I was in Atlanta, and I saw this ad, the Nancy Pelosi Gingrich environmental ad. And then I switched channels, and there was Newt Gingrich on Fox being interviewed by Sean Hannity, saying that Democrats admire English American terrorists. And I thought to myself, this is exactly what the right does. You know, they make these extreme statements. They say anything they want. They say Al-Qaeda loves Obama, or as Congressman King said, Al-Qaeda will be dancing in the streets if Obama wins. We had Senator Hatch. We had Congressman Hastert in 04 saying the same thing effectively, that terrorists want Kerry to win. This was the RNC talking point. And I think that, why should Democrats give them cover? These are completely laughable and detestable comments, and there should be zero tolerance for them.
But the American public seems to want a new sense of bipartisanship.
Absolutely. There should be bipartisanship, but there should be bipartisanship around what is right in this country.
Well, global warming is an area where Newt Gingrich and Nancy Pelosi can agree on something.
Yes, but then Nancy Pelosi should say to him, listen, if you continue saying that I, as a Democrat, love terrorists, I'm not going to sit on a couch with you and do an ad on global warming, which increases his legitimacy.
Wasn't there a time when you loved John McCain?
Yes, in 2000. I write about it in the book because it was very hard for me to see his transformation, to see the kind of Faustian bargain he made. You know, this was a man.
Well, you went through a transformation. Why can't he go through a transformation?
Well, because I don't really think that this is a transformation of the heart. I think this is a pure political transformation. This, he has become the pandering pawn of the right. This is a man who called the religious right, people like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, agents of intolerance. I don't really think that they're not agents of intolerance. I think he's made the calculation that he needs them in order to win. But look at all the areas he's gone back on. You know, immigration. He said in one of the debates that he would not be voting for his own immigration bill. He had spoken out eloquently and passionately against George Bush's tax cuts in the middle of a war. Now he wants to make them permanent. And the ultimate surrender for me was when this man, this war hero, this man who had been tortured, voted against the bill that would have prevented the CIA from using torture. Not to mention his delusional views on Iraq, which in my opinion should prevent him from being able to use sharp scissors, let alone be president of the United States.
And yet he is still described as a maverick.
Only because the media takes so long to update their images.
And why do you think that is? Some people have suggested it's because he's really good with the press, that he knows how to charm people. But, you know, Barack Obama knows how to charm people. Hillary Clinton knows how to charm people.
John McCain and George Bush before him really are very good with the press. And remember, if you go back and read some of the liberal media's responses to George Bush, especially during 2000, they were amazing. Remember, George Bush was presented as a different kind of a Republican who was good with Hispanics, who was a compassionate conservative who did not believe in nation building. Do you remember that?
I do. Why do you think the press hasn't challenged McCain on that whole matter of al-Qaeda dancing in the streets if Obama is elected?
Well, that was actually Congressman King. What McCain said,
but McCain
is that
didn't disavow.
McCain didn't fully disavow it, exactly. And also he himself said that al-Qaeda is going to escalate violence in order to prevent me, John McCain, from being elected, which is a kind of similar statement that al-Qaeda has a candidate in this election. And, you know, if al-Qaeda has a candidate in this election, why isn't it John McCain? After all, George Bush's policies have been the biggest recruitment bonanza for al-Qaeda.
One strong objection you raise in the book is the politicization of 9/11. That follows everything we've just been talking about.
Exactly. I mean, the politicization of 9/11 is what has led to the fear-mongering that basically was responsible for George Bush's re-election in 2004. I mean, there is no reason for George Bush to have been re-elected after there were no WMD, after Abu Ghraib, after Guantanamo.
Well, the fear-mongering worked. So if I were a politician right now, I would say, gee, maybe I should frighten people a little bit. The alternative is to reassure them that we can really do something positive. I'm going to not get elected if I do that.
Well, if the Democratic nominee wants to scare the American people, they should scare them by showing them how the rights policies have made us less safe, which is at least a legitimate thing, by pointing out that the real threats, as the commanders on the ground have said, are in Afghanistan and Pakistan right now, and yet we're focusing our military forces in Iraq.
What was your reaction to Hillary Clinton's statement that she would obliterate Iran if it attacked Israel?
It was a staggeringly irresponsible statement, and I'm amazed again by the fact that the media haven't really pursued it as hard as they should.
My guest is Arianna Huffington, whose latest book is Right is Wrong, How the Lunatic Fringe Hijacked America, Shredded the Constitution, and Made Us All Less Safe, and What You Need to Know to End the Madness. It is published by Knopf. I'm still confused as to why. Oh, I didn't mention that this is WNYC. I'm Leonard Lopate. I'm still confused, maybe because I'm embarrassed to be part of the press after all this conversation. Why do you think the press is doing this? Are people just so stupid, or is somebody, in the old days they blamed Scaife for it all. He was the guy behind that, what Hillary Clinton called a vast right-wing conspiracy. But what is the reason that the press has been doing such a lousy job in your estimation?
Well, I never believe in conspiracies. I think the kind of self-censorship that members of the media do is much more powerful. And we've seen that from the selling of the war. Remember the way so many in the mainstream media refused to ask the tough questions, refused to look at the lack of evidence. There were many exceptions. And in the book, I also have an honor roll section where I sort of pay respect to the members of the press who got it right, you know, including Walter Pincus of the Washington Post, including many great reporters.
Well, the Night Ritters,
yeah. So there were many great glaring exceptions. It's never everybody. When we talk about the mainstream media, you know, we need to remember that. But then look at Bob Woodward missing the story. Look at Tim Russert week after week failing to ask the tough questions. We have a section in the book called Russert Watch, you know, where I kind of take a few of his shows and deconstruct them to see how he always fails to ask the sort of tough follow-up questions that you need to ask in order to get to the bottom of what is happening.
But he has a reputation for being a tough questioner.
Exactly.
Why do you think that
because
is?
Because he puts up these gotcha statements like, you know, you said that in 1525 and now you are saying this.
On the other hand, as you point out earlier, 81% of Americans, at least in one poll, said that we're headed in the wrong direction. I think that the figures vary, but it doesn't matter whether it's 69% or 81%. I think 69% think that Iraq was a mistake now.
Right.
63% think that George Bush is a failed president. These are high poll numbers. If the press is doing such a bad job, why is the public getting this idea?
The public is leading the way. The public is ahead of the media and ahead of democratic leaders. The public has been wanting to bring the troops home from Iraq before democratic leaders stood up and asked for it. The public, as you pointed out, 81%, I think this is a very legitimate number of the public, think this country is on the wrong track.
I remember years ago asking Ben Bradley why, after the success of Watergate, did the Washington Post drop a whole bunch of other stories, including the savings and loan story. And he said it was our feeling that it was just too technical, that the public wouldn't understand it.
I don't think that this is the reason here. I think that...
Well, do you think it was the reason there either? Maybe I'm an exception, but I want all of that stuff in my newspaper, even if I don't understand it.
And I don't think it's true that the American people don't understand these things. I think the American people have incredibly good instincts, and that's why I worry when, by appealing to their lizard brain, we kind of basically bring the worst out of the people and make us respond to fear as opposed to what is right for the country. And we see again and again that by presenting two sides to every story, we kind of basically plant the seeds of doubt. You don't have to convince people of anything. You just have to make them wonder, oh, is global warming really real? Maybe not. Is Iraq really such a disaster? Maybe not. That's all you need to do. Plant the seeds of doubt. And that's what has been happening so effectively. And look how much work has gone into it. You know, I mean, this Pentagon story is a huge story. We're talking about military analysts who are supposed to be the experts, who are supposed to be able to explain to us what is happening, who in fact are not telling us the truth.
There are other military experts like Anthony Zinni who have been critical of the administration's policies who don't get to analyze these things. I guess the press feels that if you bring in a critic, in a way you're skewing the story.
Right, exactly. And yet they knew that these military experts were basically Pentagon pawns. That is really the most tragic thing. And why isn't there more of a demand for accountability?
Well, many of them were actually working for companies that were that are creating a war, aiding the war effort, and you would have thought that that would have made them automatically disqualified them for commenting on something because it was in their own special interest. What would you do? You keep on talking about Iraq being a big mistake. Would you just pull the troops out?
Well, obviously, we wouldn't pull the troops out overnight. This is only being suggested in the caricatures that the right is painting. But
we did
yes.
that in Vietnam, didn't we? Finally, after saying we couldn't do that?
Yeah, but I think we need to bring them out, start bringing them out now. And the process will take, you know, a year, maybe a little more than a year. But basically, we need to begin the process. Our presence there basically makes us an occupying force in the eyes of the Iraqis. And I believe we're a destabilizing force.
When you publish those 1,800 different bloggers in the Huffington Post, you're also doing, to some degree, what you're criticizing, aren't you? Because not everybody agrees. And you wind up with a kind of a debate, and sometimes it's a false debate.
Well, actually, we are open to multiple voices. You know, we don't, again, censor our bloggers. But at the same time, we are presenting the news with a certain point of view, meaning that we pick the stories to put at the top of our homepage that we believe are the most important stories. So we have a lot of stories, for example, on what's happening in Iraq. We have a war wire that tracks the news from the front. And we're going to stay, for example, on this Pentagon story. Unlike many of the mainstream media, we will continue to expose it.
It's been my experience over the years that I've been doing this show that people want to hear what they want to hear. And so when I brought critics of some Clinton administration policies on my show here, Lanny Guinier, Joyce and Elders, for example, also Jennifer Flowers, got a lot of angry mail. More recently, when I brought people on to talk about, question some of the conventional wisdom, I've gotten angry mail. It's my sense that the way the media work these days is that the people who want to know what they want to know of a certain sort watch O'Reilly and Hannity and listen to Rush Limbaugh, and the people who want to hear something else will be watching Keith Olbermann, and I guess there are a couple of other things now on MSNBC. They're more likely to listen to public radio than they are to ABC. In the end, we're or Air America. Does that mean that we pretty much only want we're all the choir finally, and we only want people who are singing to the choir?
I don't think so. I think the fact that you get letters or emails protesting doesn't mean.
And then they say, "I'm never going to listen to you again."
But remember, that is a tiny, tiny percentage of the people listening to you. It's very important for us online to remember that too. 1% of 1% of people going online comment. You know, this generally, this is an insignificant number, incredibly important in terms of building community, but insignificant in terms of the total number going to different sites online. And in the same way, I'm sure it's a tiny percentage of the people who listen to your show who bother to complain.
Although I don't want to discourage any responses to our shows. We love hearing from our listeners. And
we love having commenters.
Obviously, you could not survive without it running an internet news service, the Huffington Post. My great thanks to Arianna Huffington for coming by to talk about the latest book, Right is Wrong, How the Lunatic Fringe Hijacked America, Shredded the Constitution, and Made Us All Less Safe, and What You Need to Know to End the Madness. It's published by Knopf. Do you know when your program is broadcast here on this station?
Sunday morning. Mm.
So, and that's with Matt Miller.
Matt Miller, Bob Scheer, and Tony Blankley.
Thank you so much for being
with us. Thank you so much.